so tall a tree, so small a man. A man may grow for all he's worth, but only trees are down to earth. So tall a tree, so small a man.
You know, Bill asked the impossible question. You know, there really is no perfect tree. You can have the right tree for the right location, but, you know, you're always going to have some mesh. You're always going to have some roots. You know, there's only so much control you can put on a tree, but, you know, you got to – that's just part of a tree. And we've got a texter that texted in it, 411923, and said they have a ash tree. They didn't plant it, you know, so it's obviously a home that they have purchased and moved into, but it's very mature. It's lost most of its leaves, and they want to know, can they trim it now?
Yeah, no, this is a perfect time to trim all your deciduous shrubs and trees. Once they lose their leaves and the sap isn't flowing, it's a great time to get in there and trim your elms and your ash and your pistache and your pecans and your mulberries. All those trees that are losing their leaves right now, this is the ideal time. We really target December or January. Interestingly, in Arizona, we have a lot of what are considered semi-deciduous trees, and the elm is really in that group. Their leaves will persist a long time. In fact, our pistache tree is still hanging in there with a lot of leaves on it still. You have other trees that will drop their leaves a lot earlier in the season. At the first hint of cold weather, they'll drop their leaves. But in Arizona, because our temperatures are so mild, and we had that nice nice rain in recent weeks, the trees are really healthy, and they hang on to their leaves. In fact, what they'll do sometimes is hang on, you know, right up until the new buds are starting to form, and then they'll dump them like all in 1 week, or like within a day or so. Then the new buds come on, the new leaves emerge. And you hardly even have much of a deciduous season of having those barren trees. But yeah, this is a great time, good time to get in there and start trimming those trees.
And they had a follow-up question on the text as well. How much water do they need when they are dormant right now? And I've noticed you're talking about, you know, sometimes they do a leaf drop. It seems like our ash trees, when they get a heavy watering in the winter, they immediately drop after that. It's like they got all the water they needed. They're storing up. Now it's quick. Shut off. We're ready to go.
Yeah. It depends a lot upon the location of the tree, the soil conditions, and the water. Sometimes trees will drop their leaves because they're water stressed. Because when leaves are on, part of the one of the byproducts of photosynthesis is water vapor that's being released from the leaves in addition to oxygen. So trees don't want to lose any water. Any more than they need to. So they'll sometimes drop their leaves. Interestingly, in some yards where they have four or five of the same species of trees, they'll drop their leaves at different times. Well, that's just a function of the trees being under a little bit more stress, that it'll drop its leaves a little bit earlier, and then the next tree will drop them a week later and a week later. Those trees might have a little bit better soil conditions, might just be a healthier tree, might have had a better root ball when it was planted and better planting conditions. So those factors are interesting. I have customers who have these uniform trees, and they say, why are they dropping leaves at a different time? And we've kind of analyzed that over the years and realized we might need to do a little additional fertilizing on that tree and maybe do some vertical mulching to improve the soil conditions to try to help them. And what they'll do is they'll put on their leaves later. Those stressed trees will drop their leaves earlier and actually put on leaves later. Because they just don't have the resources, the energy reserves to put on those leaves any sooner. So, if you have those conditions, you might want to be doing a little bit more for those trees to try to nurse them along and give them a little bit better chance.
Well, I want to highlight Janet, and you're raising your hand, so you have something.
Well, but I just want to remind people to pay attention when they're trimming these trees in their dormant state, is maintain the natural shape of the tree, and don't top the tree, and don't remove more than 20% of the branches during the pruning period. But maintaining that shape of the tree is the most important.
20%. John, I think you say 30. You're a little more generous on the.
Well, it's really species specific. The ANSI standards used to say 25%. But they stopped that because then people were using the 25% as license to trim up to a quarter of the branches.
Yeah.
And that's not true. Citrus only needs some minor grooming, for instance.
Right.
You can get by with maybe 5 or 10% foliage removal in a given season. And other trees, you can go 30 or 40% on your really vigorous trees that some of you've got those tigers by the tail, those really vigorous trees that have achieved their landscape purpose, then they've exceeded their landscape purpose, then you've got this monster on your hands, and it's all you can do to keep them under control. Those trees you can probably, get away with trimming 30, 40% in a given year. But yeah, it really is species specific. That's why the ANSI standards changed this last time and took the percentage out. They said it's species specific. Know your species well enough to know what they can handle. So, but I like the 20%. That's better because that's on the conservative side. I'd rather err on the side of taking a little too little,
right,
and being able to come back in a few months and maybe take a little bit more.
Totally.
If you're not sure if you should cut the branch or not, don't, because it'll be there when you come back to trim it next time, and you can always cut it then.
Yeah.
Now, Janet, you've specialized in urban landscape sustainability, and I wanted to focus on that a little bit later in the program. We're going to be talking about, water savings and some of the things that are happening now with CAP hitting the Tier 1 rations that hit the Colorado River. And most of our water use, they say, about 70% on our properties is outdoor use, and obviously your landscape design, water use comes into that.
Absolutely. The urban landscape sustainability idea is that the landscape is a system, and you've got the soil and you've got the vegetation, and whether it's grass or rock, and the grading is very important, is you want your landscape to work as a system to, we'll just say, for example, deliver water during the rain that we do get to the landscape areas. So if you have the opportunity to shape your land and grade it in such a way that the water flows, maybe you have gutters, you can collect the water or divert the water from the gutter end to the landscape area. And that's a really good way to help support your landscape and be less dependent on the domestic supply. The other example I can give is using the smart controllers and setting them with the settings that recognize if we've had rain in the last 7 or 10 days, the controller won't turn on. So we're just trying to balance the use of water in the landscape so that it's appropriate for the plant types you have. And this works as a system, and it needs very little maintenance. And one of those big points is to plant things at the right spacing, right plant, right place. Let them grow into their space, and so you don't have to be forced to prune them. And there's just all kinds of little things to think about. And the landscape takes time. I mean, you can get it done, it looks great, but then you got to give it 3 to 5 years to really come into its own.
Any great examples you send people to that are public areas before you start a design process, like the Scottsdale Zeroscape Garden on Hayden, just south of Saguaro, I think is a great example. The
Saguaro High School.
Saguaro.
What did I say?
You
said Saguaro.
Yeah, Saguaro High School.
Mm-hmm.
Just south of there.
Sabercats. It's my alma mater. I just wanted everybody to know this.
He's not giving it up.
No,
I'm not.
No.
Giving it up.
No. And ASU.
They did win the state championship this year.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
In football. That's
and
right.
The player that caught the winning interception for the Georgia Bulldogs went to
Saguaro. There you go. Boom. Go Sabercats.
Good year for you guys.
Yes.
So, but that water treatment plant just south of the high school is a great Zeroscape Garden example people can just walk through.
Bill Kastenizer, who works for the city of Scottsdale, manages that park and does a fantastic job. It's great place to go to look at some native flora and just see how the different applications and how they use plants in a wise way there.
And the ASU Polytech campus way out in Mesa, I don't even remember where it was. I went there on a bus tour from the Arizona Nursery Association, and they did a great job on that campus is another great example. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are there other treasures out there that
there's Desert Botanical Garden. I think some of the properties that are being developed in town, just driving around and recognizing when plants are in their natural form, that's the desirable form that we want. We're trying to steer people away from the shearing and the shaping, and so that people aren't educated by that type of maintenance. So I think, the places you guys have mentioned are great to go recognize what plants are supposed to look like.
Take pictures, take notes, what you like, what you don't like, mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of things that, when you go through a subdivision, you get the impression you don't have a lot of options.
There's tons of options.
That's not true. Right. Always amazes me just how much is available out there and how many different native or drought tolerant varieties there are that you don't really get to see until you do a botanical garden or visit one of these.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and it's a blend of the trees, the shrubs, the ground cover, the flowers. They're at different levels in the landscape, and it's just putting them together in a beautiful way that they're all going to be enjoying their spot, their location, and working together as a team, to provide a nice, they say, I've heard this, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, Janet, that you start with the lowest elevation plants near the curb and you build, vertically toward the building. So, you don't have a tree blocking, right on the curb, blocking your view of everything beyond it. So, start with those nice ground covers near the street, then some shrubs, and eventually some trees closer to the building providing shade.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Plants should have a job. They have a responsibility.
And one thing on the talking point you have is olives. So olive trees have a job of producing olives, but you guys also have a job of preventing that.
We do. This is a good time of year to be spraying your olives. If you haven't already, there's still time to do that. You can. We spray a growth regulator on the trees to prevent them from fruiting, or I shouldn't say prevent them from fruiting, reduce the amount of fruiting. We try to get a coverage well enough so that we can get about 80% of that fruit from dropping those olives all over the landscape. But it's also a good time to maybe prune those trees too, because if you're thinking of pruning them anyway, you could do a little bit of pruning, and then we can get better spray coverage when we come back a week or so later and spray them for the fruit prevention.
Now you can't. If I remember right, you can't plant olive trees anymore in Maricopa County. Is that true?
Or you can't plant the old world olive trees that produce the fruit because they're heavy pollen producers. But they do have a Swan Hill variety, a fruitless olive, which is real popular in the landscape. In fact, that's one on my short list of smaller trees that are ideal for those locations where you can't handle a larger tree. Getting back to you, who is the caller? Was it Bill?
It was.
In Tucson? There's a short list of some smaller trees, including the Swan Hill olive, citrus trees, the Texas olive, a leatherleaf acacia, a mastic, a yellow oleander. These are all trees that are kind of in the 10 to 12-foot height range at maturity, maybe 15 feet. And they are ideal for providing shade to windows at the little bit lower elevation, and they don't have aggressive roots, so they can be planted in smaller spaces.